राय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the 10th canto, chapter 81. So we'll read the chapter summary and the first two verses. So the title of this chapter is The Lord Blesses Sudama Brahman. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna ate a morsel of the flat rice brought by his friend Sudama and bestowed upon him wealth greater than that of the King of Heaven. In the course of his loving talks with his friend Sudama, Lord Krishna said, "My dear Brahmana, have you brought any gift for me from home? I regard as very significant even the smallest offering from my loving devotee." But the poor Brahmana was ashamed to present Krishna with his meager gift of flat rice. However, since Lord Krishna is the super soul dwelling in all hearts, he knew why Sudama had come to visit him. So he grabbed the bundle of flat rice Sudama was hiding and ate a handful of it with great pleasure. He was about to eat a second morsel when Rukmini Devi stopped him. Feeling as if he had gone back to Godhead, Sudama spent that night comfortably in Lord Krishna's palace. And the next morning, he set off for home. As he passed along the highway, he thought of how fortunate he was to have been so honored by Shri Krishna. Absorbed in his meditation, Sudama arrived at the place where his home used to be, and he was struck with great wonder. Instead of his broken-down hovel, he saw a series of opulent palaces. While he stood astonished, a group of beautiful men and women came forward to greet him with singing and music. The Brahmana's wife, wonderfully adorned with celestial jewelry, came out of the palace and welcomed him with great love and reverence. Sudama entered his home together with her, thinking that this extraordinary transformation must have been due to the Supreme Lord's mercy on him. From then on, Sudama lived his life amidst lavish wealth, yet he maintained his mood of detachment and constantly chanted the glories of Lord Krishna. In a short time, he broke off all bonds of bodily attachment and attained to the kingdom of God. So we have texts 1 and 2. We could do 1 responsibly and 2 we can chant together. I guess they're together, so we could chant all of them together. All of them responsibly. So, Shri Shuka Vacha. स इत्थं द्विजमुखेन सह संकथयन् हरिः सर्वभूतमनोभिज्ञः स्मयमान उवाच तं ब्रह्मण्यो ब्राह्मणं कृष्णो भगवान् प्रहसन् प्रियम् प्रेम्णा निरीक्षेणैव प्रेक्षन् खलु सतां गतिः प्रभुजी Shri Shukavacha Sa Ittham Yajamukhena Sarasam Tathayam Hari Sarva Bhutamana Bhishna Sayamana Vachatam Brahmanya Brahmanam Krishna Bhagavan Prasan Priyam Vignan Vishnitam So, friends, anybody? Sorry. Please, please. Shri Shuka Vacha. Anybody else? Okay. So translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Hari, Krishna, perfectly knows the hearts of all living beings and is especially devoted to the Brahmanas. While the Supreme Lord, the goal of all saintly persons, conversed in this way with the best of the twice born, he laughed and spoke the following words to that dear friend of his, the Brahman Sudama, all the while smiling and looking upon him with affection. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the words Sarva Bhuta Manobhidnya indicate that since Lord Krishna knows the minds of everyone, he could tell at once that his friend Sudama had brought some flat rice for him and was ashamed to present it. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti's further explanation of this verse, Lord Krishna smiled at this moment, thinking, yes, I am going to make you show what you brought for me. He smiled and turned to laughter as he thought, how long are you going to keep this precious gift hidden in your cloth? Krishna glanced toward the bundle hidden inside his friend's garment, telling Sudama by his loving glance, the veins showing through your emaciated skin and your ragged clothes astonish everyone present, but these symptoms of poverty will last only until tomorrow morning. Although Lord Krishna is Bhagavan, the Supreme Independent Lord, he is always pleased to reciprocate with those who are priya, his cherished servants. As the indulgent patron of the Brahmana class, he especially enjoys favoring Brahmanas who are additionally qualified by unconditional devotion to him. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I have a PowerPoint today also. Go to slideshow somehow. Is there a slideshow? Or this is in the slideshow, everything goes. It's fine if you can read it, then you don't have to read it. Okay. So the topic today is the Brahman. Who is a Brahmin? Brahmanya Deva, we have this famous verse, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. We pray to Krishna like this. This, and it's referred to here also, Brahmanya. Brahmanyaha, that's how Krishna is referred. He especially favors the Brahmanas. So let's look at who a Brahmana is. I compiled some verses from different places in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll start with the occupation of a Brahmin. And this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam 7, 11, 14. So there are six activities that Brahmins are supposed to do. Three activities are compulsory out of those six. And these are studying the Vedas. That means in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, literatures, devotional literatures written by the six Goswamis. Worshipping the deity and giving charity. These are the three compulsory activities. While there are three other activities, and these are as follows. Teaching others how to worship the deity, so training, giving training. Teaching the Vedic literatures, that means teaching the Srimad Bhagavatam and so on. And accepting charity from others. These are the three other activities that Brahmin should perform. But the compulsory ones are the ones I mentioned before. That means even if we are not teaching others, we are obligated to study. Obligated is the wrong word. But by nature, the Brahmin does these things. And that's what singles him or her out as a Brahmin. There are some alternative occupations for Brahmin also. In addition to these six, this is in 7, 11, 16. Varta vichitra shalina yayavara shilonchanam vipravrittish chaturdheyam shreyasi chottarottara. As an alternative, the Brahmana may also take to the Vaishya's occupational duty of agriculture, cow protection or trade. This is an alternative. He may depend on that which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddy field every day. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor. Or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are four means of livelihood that may be also adopted by Brahmanas. Among these four, each of them in succession is better than the one preceding it. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is an interesting, enlightening study of the culture that existed at the time of the Srimad Bhagavatam when it was spoken. Collecting and begging in the paddy field is not feasible for us now, but so it's fascinating and gives a historical perspective also. So these are four means of livelihood. The point is that these are, although they are the Vaishya's occupation duty of agriculture and so on, in alternative situations the Brahmin could connect with those occupations also. So let's look at the symptoms of a Brahmana, which is 7.11.21. This is very similar to the famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, but this is from the Bhagavatam. So this is Shamo Damas Tapas Shaucham. These four words are the same as that verse. But Santoshah Kshantir Arjavam Jnanam Daya Achyutatmatvam Satyam Cha Brahma Lakshanam. I like this verse equally or maybe more, because in this one there is Achyutatmatvam, which was not present in the Bhagavad Gita's verse. Achyuta is Krishna. Atmatvam, so let's see how Srila Prabhupada translates it. Complete surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the criterion for a Brahmana. See, part of this is that in the Bhagavad Gita, when the Brahman's symptoms are explained, those are done in the context of the three modes of material nature. Krishna starts out that discussion by saying, Na tatasti prithivyama divideveshu vapunaha sattvam prakriti jayarmuktam yadibhi syatra virgunaihi. There is nobody who has escaped the modes of material nature. And then he says, Brahmana kshatriya visham shudranam cha parantapa karmani pravipattani svabhava prabhavair gunaihi. By the influence of the modes of material nature, prabhavair gunaihi, Brahman, kshatriya, shudra and vaishya are present in the material world. And Prabhupada would often give the example of how, even though there is no varnashram system in the West, still you see professors in the universities and you see soldiers and you see businessmen and so on, which was quite amazing to me. It kind of captured my imagination that there was this fundamental law in this material world. No matter what society you go to, that's going to manifest itself, because the material gunas, the three modes of material nature, influence everybody. There is nobody who is exempt from this. So, prithivyamva divi deveshuva punaha, whether in the heavens, in the demigods, or the Lord Brahma, all the way from there, there is nobody who has escaped from this. And we can see the truth of this statement in our societies, in the way our societies are organized. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is emphatically devotional. And so sometimes the word Brahmana and word Vaishnava mean the same thing, from what I can see. So there are, I'll explain the different types of Brahmanas and categories of Brahmanas. But in this verse you can see Achyutatmatvam, Matvam, complete surrender to Krishna, is a criterion. So this is a Vaishnava, okay, with Brahminical qualities. So Shama Adamas Tapashyaucham. Shama means control of the mind. Damaha, control of the senses. Tapaha, austerity. Shaucham, cleanliness. Santoshaha, satisfaction. Kshantihi, forgiveness, Rupa translates it. Arjavam, simplicity. Jnanam, knowledge. Daya, mercy. So Brahman's jewel is also mercy to living beings. Achyuta Atmatvam is the complete surrender. And also Satyam. This Satyam is not present in the Bhagavad Gita's verse. Truthfulness. Speaking the truth. So this is one of the austerities of speech in the 17th chapter. But Satyam Priyahitam Chayat. the truth has to be spoken in a way that's beneficial also. So that's why you need mercy, daya. Not that we speak the truth and destroy the other person. So these are the symptoms of a Brahman. Now a Brahman is not by birth. There is controversy, of course, as you know, in India. But also the portrayal of the Hindu diaspora, a culture in the West, has been emphatically that it is a discriminatory system by birth. But if you go back to the scriptures, there are emphatic statements that this is not true. And I'll present some evidence of this, at least a few verses from different scriptures that show this. So first we look at, it's not just the Srimad Bhagavatam that's saying, you know, for they'll say, well, so this is 7.11.35. Yasya yal lakshanam proktam pumso varna abhivyanjakam yad anyatra api drushyet tatte naiva vinirvishet. If one shows the symptoms of being a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra, so I describe the symptoms of a Brahmin, there are also symptoms of the other classes. Even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. So the classification, it's a classification. Why is the classification present? So that it is optimally utilized, society is optimally utilized for Krishna's service. That's the whole purpose. So even if he has appeared in another class, it doesn't really make any difference. Yal lakshanam proktam. Lakshan means characteristics, symptoms. What are the person's qualities? That decides whether one is Brahmin, Kshatriya, Shudra, Vaishya. Now, Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita. There's another praman. Guna karma vibhagashaha. Chaturvarnya maya srishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. Karma is activities. Guna is qualities. Activities come from qualities. Propensity for action comes from the guna, the qualities. So, even Krishna is saying, well, that's guna, he's not saying janma. Prabhupada would emphatically also say this at different occasions. Not janma karma vibhagasha, it's not by birth. So, here is CC Madhya, 24.330. This is amazing. Prabhupada gave a very long purport for this, and it's a comprehensive. I was almost thinking that I should, for today's lecture, just read that purport from start to finish, but then it becomes monotonous for people. So he quotes many different sources. So let's look at he first looks at Sridhar Swami's purport to this verse that I just explained, 7.11.35. Shamadi bhir eva brahmanadi vyavaharu mukhya na jati matraditi aha yasyeti. Yadi yadi anyatra varnantare api drishyete tad varnantaram te naiva lakshana nimitte naiva varnena vinirdishet na tu jati nimitte neti arkaha na tu jati. The most important criterion for deciding whether to deal with someone as a Brahman or as a member of another varna is the presence or absence of self-control and similar Brahminical qualities. We should not judge primarily according to superficial characteristics like birth. This is stated in the verse beginning Yasya, that's the Bhagavatam verse. If the qualities of one varna are seen in someone born in another, he should be designated according to the varna of his qualities, not that of his birth. Here's the next one. This is from the Mahabharata, still quoting Srila Prabhupada's writings from the Madhya Leela. There is a similar statement made by Neelakantha, a commentator on the Mahabharata. Shudropi shamadi upeto brahmana eva brahmanopi kamadi upeta shudra eva. Although one may be born in a shudra family, if he is endowed with Brahminical qualities, beginning with shama, again, the control of the mind. So that's the primary characteristic. How much is he able to control his mind, the pushings of the senses? He is to be accepted as a Brahmin. Although one may be born in a Brahmana family, if he is endowed with the qualities beginning with kama, lust, he is to be considered Shudra. So even if it doesn't really matter where we are born, criterion is symptoms. How lusty is a person? That's the criterion for deciding whether that person is qualified to be Brahmana. Of course, the point here also is that with the process of devotional service, the famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhidyate, what is it? Chindante Hridaya Granthis Bhidyate Sarva Samshayaha Shiyante Chasya Karmani Drishva Evatmani Ishware. The process of devotional service can change, can transform. people who have symptoms of lust. So it is not that that one's nature is permanent in this world. But after, when one takes up devotional service, that purifies lusty desires from the heart, and it qualifies one for Daivi Varnashram, where the Shudra now, who is a Vaishnava, who might be in a Vaishnava society, is no longer considered to be just seen on a bodily platform. That person is a Vaishnava. That means that that person may have certain bodily abilities. Okay, maybe a Vaishya, maybe a Kshatriya. They might have certain occupational abilities, and they're just simply dovetailing them in Krishna service. It's not that when somebody becomes a Vaishnava, he becomes an Albert Einstein. The brain doesn't change. We are born with these bodies. So, utilizing our bodily abilities for Krishna service is part of our philosophy. But for Vaishnavas to see somebody and designate them as Shudra, Kshatriya, it is dangerous. Because the bodily Varnashram system, if it is devoid from devotional service, then these things apply. But when somebody takes up devotional service sincerely, then lust becomes destroyed from the heart. Okay. So there is, I think that there are two parallel lines of thought and logic here. One is the Vaishnava logic, which is the Bhagavad Vidhi, and the Varnashram system, which is the Pancharatrika Vidhi. And maybe this is confusing to everybody, but I'll quit and move on. So, in this regard, quoting Prabhupada further, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarks that Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Goswami, although not born in Brahmana families, here's an example, great acharyas, are accepted as bona fide spiritual masters because they were Brahmanas by qualification. Personalities like Sri Ganga Narayan, Ramakrishna, and many others who were actually born in Brahmana families accepted Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Goswami as their spiritual masters. So moving on, there are five types of Brahmanas. This is what I gathered from the first verse in 7:15. Sri Narada Vacha, karma nishtha dvijaha kechit tapo nishtha nripapare svadhyaye anya prabachane kechana jnana yogayo. Narada Muni continued, my dear king, some Brahmanas are very much attached to fruitive activities. Some are attached to austerities and penances. Others study the Vedic literatures. Some, although very few, cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially bhakti yoga. So there are five. Fruitive activities, okay, one. Austerities, two. Svadhyaya, studying the Vedic literature, three. Cultivating knowledge, four. And Prabhupada makes the distinction of bhakti yoga. The bhakti is not in this verse, but Prabhupada adds, and also bhakti. So that's how I counted five. So, why is this classification separate? Why is the bhakti, Prabhupada says, is some very few cultivate bhakti yoga? Because there are brahmanas in the word brahman also refers to social structure, which can be independent of Krishna. Where these brahmanas may have no practice of bhakti yoga in their sadhana. They might be, Prabhupada says, some brahmanas very attached to fruitive activities. So they might do some karma kanda. And this is primarily the types of brahmins that exist in India today, those that pass in the name of Brahmins. They go to homes and perform, you know, take money and perform some homa or wedding rituals. I just participated as a priest in a wedding in New York. It was interesting to see the different, you know, there are all kinds of different rituals, offering prayers to Indra and Surya and the Shani, all the Navagrahas and so on and so forth. Interesting to see. So those are the types of Brahmins that are left. But there are also Brahmins who do bhakti yoga. And Prabhupada established ISKCON, and he would say this is one of the goals of, one of his main goals. When he was interviewed by reporters in airports, he would say, have come to give America a brain. And that's what he means. He doesn't mean these Brahmins who perform karmakandic activities, but Brahmins who understand Bhakti Yoga and practice Bhakti Yoga and teach Bhakti Yoga. So moving on, what about those who do not worship Krishna? This is the 11th canto, 5th chapter, 5th verse. Vipro rajanya vaishyava harehe prataha padantikam shrautena janmana tapi muyanti amnaya vadina. So on the other hand, brahmanas, members of the royal order, and vaishyas, even after being allowed to approach the lotus feet of the Lord, Supreme Lord Hari, by receiving the second birth of Vedic initiation, can become bewildered and adopt various materialistic philosophies. This refers to people who are overly attached to studying different Prabhupada's. One of his instructions was, don't study so many books. And even the Rupa Goswami is one of the things he mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Singh. Because what happens when we study all kinds of things is we see contradictions and we may not be able to resolve them, and then we start to adopt stances that don't that are contradictory to the tradition. So there are examples of devotees in India who became impersonalists by this, studying too much, hanging out with the impersonalist crowd, thinking that that is superior philosophical structure to Vaishnavism, and then going away, falling away. They can become bewildered and adopt various materialistic philosophies. Vishwanath Chakravarti writes in this slide, this verse describes those who become indifferent to bhakti by obtaining a small amount of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada warns all the time about speculation. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, having attained qualification to worship the Lord's feet by study of the Vedas, though receiving the sacred thread, become bewildered by the results of karma, since they interpret the meaning of the Vedas, which causes the bewilderment. It is said in the Gita, and he quotes this verse, Yami Maam Pushpitam Vacham. That's the context. It happened in Krishna's time as well. He's warning, don't get too caught up with Vedic activities, because it's not going to help. So next slide. This is a problem because in the Bhagavatam 11.5.2, Sri Chamasa says, each of the four social orders are actually born through different combinations of the modes of nature from the face, arms, thighs and feet of the Supreme Lord. Thus the four spiritual orders were generated. And 11.53, the next verse says, if any of the members of the four varnas and ashrams fail to worship or intentionally disrespect the personality of Godhead, who is the source of their own creation, they'll fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. So the natural orders that have emerged in society, professors, soldiers, businessmen, all these, they're all destined to a hellish state of life if they do not use their occupations, their propensities, material qualities for serving Krishna. Who is the topmost Brahmin? So these are the last two slides. I know people are getting antsy. This is maybe too technical. Who are the last... Who is the topmost Brahmin? So there are all these five Brahmins, and of course the Padma Purana says, Mahabhagavata Shreshto, Brahmano Vair Guru Nirnam, Sarvesham Eva Lokanam Asau Pujyo Yatha Harihi, Mahakula Prasutopi Sarva Yadneshu Dikshitaha, Sahasra Shakha Dhyayicha Na Guru Syada Vaishnava. Very powerful verse. I didn't find a translation from Prabhupada of this verse, so I'm just going to try it myself. Mahabhagavata Shreshtaha Guruhu Brahmana Nrinam. Of all the people, the Mahabhagavat, the devotee on the platform of Prema, is the Shreshta, he is the topmost Brahmin and Guru. That's the first line. Sarvesham eva lokanam asau pujyo yatha harihi. Just like Hari is to be worshipped, this Mahabhagavat is to be worshipped among all people. Mahakula prasutohapi. Somebody may be born in a very high family, good kula. Sarva yadneshu dikshitaha, he might know all sacrifices. He might go to the temples in India, and his priests are extremely adept at doing all these different Vedic ceremonies. Sahasra shakha dhyayicha, might have studied thousands of Vedic literatures. Na guruhu syada vaishnava, but if he's not a Vaishnava, he cannot be accepted as a spiritual master. This is the Padma Purana. The last slide is where what we are talking about, the Brahmin. So what about the disciples, the qualifications of a disciple? These are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.10.6. Amanya matsaro daksho nirmamo drida saurada asatparo arthajidnyasur anasuyur amoghava. So these are the qualities that a disciple should have if that disciple is to be considered Brahminical. So the disciple should be amanya, without pride. This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's constant instruction. Without pride, it means without any propensity for proving to people that I am special, that I need appreciation, that I am somebody advanced, I am advanced, and so on. Matsara, amanya, amatsara, without selfishness, without possessiveness, nirmama, without laziness, should have firm faith in Guru and the Lord, should be patient in attaining his goal, desirous of knowing the truth, artha jidnyasur, free of envy and controlled in speech. These are the qualities that a disciple should strive to possess. Lofty goals for us. So I'll stop there, and then if there's a discussion, questions, we can talk. Prana Govinda Prabhu and then Tribhuvan Prabhu.
Most important Prabhupada quote on the Brahmanas. Maybe you said it, I didn't hear it. Yata kanchana tam jati tam sangrasa vidam. Prabhupada, almost like lecture I hear this. So I think maybe you can explain that.
I think you should explain, because I don't have the words memorized. So.
Now, Prabhupada put in a many, many places. Kanchana tam jati tam sangrasa vidanata tata diksha vidanena dijattam jayate ninam. So according to Prabhupada, there's four types of stages, four types of Brahman. That's why it causes clarity when we see from Prabhupada's angle. First he says, janmana jayate sudra. Everybody is born as a sudra.
Right.
We have to accept that. Then he says, dijattam jayate ninam. So once somebody accepts a guru and got twice born or got a Brahman thread, then Prabhupada also translates that as a Brahmana. So when some purport Prabhupada put as a Brahmana, it could be category of Dija, twice born, not necessarily Vipra.
Sure.
Vipra is also Brahman. Then Prabhupada quote, he says, then above that is it Veda Pathad Bhavet Vipra. Then after he got twice born or Brahman initiation, he must study. And in the course of study, when he become realized, then he's called Vipra. But Prabhupada translate as a Brahman also.
True.
So that's why Brahman so many like sounds contradict apparently, but actually does not. Because in Prabhupada's mind is so clear. Then he gives, then after he understood everything, then he realized this absolute truth. Brahma janati iti Brahman. Then that is also Brahman. So in that category. So in the beginning, Prabhupada says that any person come, any living being come to the spiritual path, if he accepted this Krishna consciousness, even beginning stage, he immediately transformed into Brahman. And then Prabhupada goes little heavy. Sometimes I hear his voice. He feel like heavy. He said, this other smartho does not understand this sloka. Yata kanchanadam, how this brass metal turned into gold, that any human being can transform into pure devotee. That part, most of the Brahmana do not understand. And Prabhupada stressed this, I hear.
So there are many aspects of this discussion. So what you're mentioning is the progression of somebody who takes up devotional service and reaches the highest Brahminical platform. What I mentioned was the categories of Brahmins that exist based on whether they take up devotional service or not. But there is another consideration here. Srila Prabhupada, towards the later years of the movement, he could see that number of the devotees he had given Brahminical initiation to were falling down. And so he, there is a famous conversation, I forget who it is with, been a while since I looked at it, but he said that they are not qualified. It is not so easy to become a Vaishnava. That's why they're falling down. So we must have varnashram. So it is both. From what I can understand, this is a complex thing, I'm not sure I understand it fully, but from what I can understand, when we do devotional service, we are on the Vaishnava platform, all these different things die out, like you said. But depending on our bodily limitations, we may or may not have, for example, there are devotees who have no interest in studying the Shastra. But they are very attached to chanting the holy name. There are devotees who are not interested in reading about, you know, so many books, but they would sing kirtan forever. So there are different, you could say, preferences, and all those preferences should be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. So I think that's my interpretation of Srila Prabhupada's approach. It's not that all, everybody, if you force fit a circle into a square, it will not work. You have to allow the circle to be the circle, you have to allow the square to be the square, and still recognizing that everybody is, both are devotees, and they're serving Krishna with their propensities.
Prabhupada's one lecture, mm-hmm. that he at least attracted me in that he said this gradual process from accepting Guru and then become qualified mm-hmm. Brahmana, then leads to Vaishnava. So then Prabhupada writes at the end, very nicely, he says that, so understanding and accepting the absolute truth and accepting chanting Hare Krishna is same. That bewildered me in the beginning. So those who are chanting, they are as good as advanced.
This is a great Brahmins. Point. So I'll just read the last, this chapter, Prabhupada, it's not Prabhupada, this is his disciples, but this last the verse, there is a purport. So Prabhupada writes this, okay. In the chapter, in the introduction to the chapter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is the last verse of chapter 81. That describes this pastime, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada comments. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul of all living entities, knows very well everyone's heart. He is especially inclined to the Brahmana devotees. Lord Krishna is also called Brahmanya Deva, which means that he is worshipped by the Brahmanas. Therefore, it is understood that a devotee who is fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead has already acquired the position of a Brahman. Without becoming a Brahmana, one cannot approach the Supreme Brahman, Lord Krishna, as you were saying. So Krishna is especially concerned with the vanquishing of the distress. So there, Prabhupada used the words Brahman, like you pointed out, with various connotations. Refer to various things. It's not one thing. And in this purport, on this commentary, he's referring to the Brahman as somebody who has realized the Supreme Brahman. So then that is a devotee. And how a devotee might realize the Supreme Brahman? Maybe by using his propensity, bodily abilities in different ways. It doesn't really matter how he realizes it. He is considered a Brahman in the sense that. So there's this famous verse which I did not cite. Aho bata swapacho to gariyan yad jivagre vartate nama tupyam te pustapah te juhu sashnur arya brahmanuchur nama grananti yete. So this verse means the same thing. If somebody is chanting the holy names of Krishna, that person has already done austerities in previous lifetimes. Austerity, te pustapah te juhu buhu, all sacrifices, Vedic sacrifices. Shashnur, they have taken bath in all the holy rivers. Brahma Anuchur, they have studied the Vedas. Nama Grananti Yete, those who are chanting the holy name now, they have already done this in the past. So we can't see people in isolation in what they are now, but there is a whole past that we are unaware of. Millions of lifetimes we are unaware of. So yeah, there is this terminology we have to be aware of in the context and the flavor with which Krishna Prabhupada uses the words.
So the details of the Varnashram system mm-hmm. is established in Manusamhita.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the rules and regulations, everything about the Varnashram mm-hmm. system.
Sure.
Because when the world is created, then you have the law book of mankind established by man. And there he established all the laws for Varnashram. There it stated that the Brahmana in dire need can take up the duty. For the first choice he gets is to take up the duty of the chatra.
Yeah.
But if not, then he goes to the Vaishya, but never the Sudra. That's how the rules.
This and is the, also explained in the Bhagavatam, by the way.
And the good case was given of Dharmacharya. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't maintain his family, so he took to the Chatriya profession. And then, but in terms of birth is fundamental within the Varnashram system too, because otherwise you have what you call
varna sanskar, in the sense that if a brahmana marries a kshatriya, it becomes what, a suta or sutaputra or something. It's not really, you know, so birth is emphasized.
No,
but that secondary concern.
Let me interrupt. But that could be a brahmana who was not born in a brahmana family, mm-hmm. who became a brahmana by qualification, who married a kshatriya, was not born in a kshatriya family, mm-hmm. who became a kshatriya by qualification. But still that marriage is not allowed.
Yeah, but those...
So I don't understand what that has to do with birth.
Those are secondary consideration. Foremost consideration, you're not supposed to break the varnashram system, lineage. Like, in other words, brahmana should only marry brahmana, kshatriya, like that.
See,
because that was established and that was fundamental at the beginning.
The point is that mm-hmm. the Manu Samhita and scriptures like this, there are different ages.
Yeah.
There is Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, and there are different social structures that are present in these different times. And according to that, the times we live in, we have instructions.
Yeah, certainly.
So my point is, let me finish. So the acharyas, Vaishnavism is revolutionary. Gaudiya Vaishnavism especially is revolutionary for Indian society, was and is revolutionary for Indian society. Because of our acharyas, have hammered this point and emphasized this point far more, and our scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam and Padma Puran, are emphasizing this point far more than emphasizing distinctions by birth. I don't know of any verse really that hammers this point, that birth is the key. They hammer the other point. Birth is not the key. Shwa pacho to gari yan, he might be born in a dog eater's family, it doesn't matter. So my point is that for the Kali Yuga, the modern Yuga, in the culture we are living, these things...
That's the point, right. I mean, but now you're saying, you see, because that's fundamental too.
Yeah.
You should emphasize for this age really,
right.
That is the consideration. But in the previous ages...
That is true.
This was not at all.
That is...
You see, okay?
Well, even in previous ages...
But for this age, certainly, that those considerations are taken. And even one is not born in a Brahminical family, if he shows Brahminical behavior and so, he's accepted as a
sure.
Brahmin. That's certainly.
Can you give him the mic?
Because Devamir Maharaj, mm-hmm. he had two wives.
Mm-hmm.
One wife was Kshatriya, one was Vaishya. This is in Dwapara Yuga.
There you
so
go.
That
I was going to say.
Not, and I tell you why, because Krishna was born.
Yeah.
Krishna come from Nanda Maharaj, they are from Vaishya wife, married to Kshatriya. So that's not applicable. It's not.
Yeah. There's a question back there, Siddhati Muni Prabhu. Any Matajis have any questions?
I'm female in the eyes of the Lord.
Loudly?
I'm a female in the eyes of the Lord.
You're a female?
Yeah. So
not in my eyes, okay.
Well, obviously you're not the Lord. But the conversations about varnashram are complex and fascinating.
Sure.
And as you brought up in class, you know, at the end, Prabhupada came. I mean, Prabhupada was very ill at the end, you know. And how? He's not like a naive person. I mean, how much did he really expect in that condition to go to Gita Nagari and establish varnashram? Or perhaps, you know, he was making a statement. I mean, that's just a thought that went through my mind. And the idea that Brahmins, you know, that devotees are falling down, this wasn't new at the end. This happened from the very beginning.
Mm.
You know, so it wasn't like all of a sudden now we have a crisis and what are we going to do about it? But it seems like he definitely wanted to make some sort of statement there. I'm not saying that's a definitive analysis,
sure,
but I'm
sure.
Just throwing this out.
It's very complex.
Yeah, you can never, I wouldn't take it for granted we ever, you know, understand all the variables. Then the other thought that comes to mind that I think just left my mind. ISKCON is supposed to be a rabbinical institution. But then you hear Prabhupada, you know, in the Hare Krishna address, even a child can take part, even a dog can take part.
Mm.
You know, all you have to do is be a jiva and desire it.
Sure.
You know, Shivananda Sain's dog went back to Godhead.
Right.
We should be so lucky. You know, and there's plenty of stories of Brahmins being far more unqualified than a shoe, a cobbler, or
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On it goes. This is
right.
Part of the tradition. So I got the microphone here, right?
Sure.
So just as a discussion point, it seems, for whatever reason, ISKCON is supposed to be a Brahminical institution, and we want to engage all these people, but, as a Brahminical institution, you have to maintain certain standards, and yet you have to engage everybody. So, it raises a lot of points here. How do we engage everybody if they are not able to engage up to the standard of a Brahminical institution? And yet we're still supposed to. I mean, my dog doesn't have to take Brahminical initiation to participate in the
chanting. See, I think what you're mentioning, what you're referring to is kind of, I wouldn't say tension, but there is some tension between the Bhagavata Vidhi and the Pancharatrika Vidhi. So in ISKCON, for functional purposes, Prabhupada had Brahminical initiation to allow those who are especially qualified in his view to perform deity worship. I mean, the Brahmin's primary function in ISKCON is deity worship, from what I can tell. So, and like I mentioned, starting, the three primary duties, obligatory duties, studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving charity. And in many different places, Prabhupada is on record saying, I want to create Brahmins. This is the reason I came to the U.S. I want to give society a brain. So, again, the connotations of the way Prabhupada uses the word Brahmin varies in context, but the way I understand it is he's saying, when he says Brahmin, he means, I want that person to take up spiritual life, to understand the importance of the fact that we are not the body, we're the soul, to come up to Sattva Guna, which is the Brahmin. Then from a functional standpoint, when he started giving initiations, he gave twice initiations to ensure that there was a class of devotees, well, the word class is unfortunate, there is a group of devotees that are engaged in Brahminical services in the temple. Somebody's got to do deity worship, and there are all kinds of rules and regulations for doing deity worship, and so on. And then, from where I stand, I mean, the fall downs and everything, he was concerned primarily with sannyasis and also brahmacharis. He wanted to create this group of people who also researched the scriptures and became like him, and go out and preach and teach and give lectures and challenge the atheists and so on and so forth. So Prabhupada wanted to create expansions of his potency that would go out and populate the world and challenge the status quo and establish Krishna consciousness. And that was his concern, that he was giving initiations, but people were falling down. So, that's my very local, limited understanding of, I wasn't there, and these are things are very complex. So. Yes, please.
I'd like to add something.
Yes.
To the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to retain your male form in the spiritual realm if you truly, genuinely want to have a selfless relationship with God, but you want it to be as a friend, and as a genuine friend?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to retain this composition and to have a relationship like that?
Of course. I mean, that's the whole idea. Depending on what your eternal relationship with this Krishna is, you can be that person. The trouble is, we don't, unless you really come up to the platform of prema, you don't really know who you are. Right now we might be feeling, I want to be Krishna's friend, but actually eternally we might be a honeybee humming around in the bushes. And that is our position, not as something that gives us, that is demeaning or that's not satisfying. That is our position that gives us the most highest bliss. In fact, you'll be miserable if you were a friend, for example. And you would be happiest when you were a bee in the garden. So in Vrindavan, everything is bliss. And there are no real distinctions. It is just that people are different by nature. We are all irreducible individuals. Eternally, we have a relationship with Krishna. And that is where we want to go back to. So at our stage, we don't have to really worry too much about, who am I, and can I remain a male form in the spiritual world? Because these are way, way beyond the grasp, beyond our grasp. It is something that is inconceivable, you could say. It is not even worth thinking about for a minute.
Now, yes. And in the spiritual realm, though, is it ever possible to change your position?
In the spiritual realm, anything is possible. It all depends on Krishna's will and desire. Okay? So it depends on Krishna's desire. If he wants you to be in a particular type of form, a particular type of service, you'll become that, and you can be anything you want. So, but again, Prabhupada would say, some questions are best answered when we go there.
Thank you.
Sure. Does Mataji have any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.